Yep. Arlo Organi came up with this incredible music, which, if anybody wants to try it, just play the chords alone, not the melody, and you will hear Paco Bell, and you will hear religious hymns, and you will hear fairy tales and lullabies just in the chords. No one ever listens to that, but try it if you play the piano. On top of these chords, then Harold started the thing off with an octave jump. Somewhere, okay, and Yip had no idea what to do with that octave jump. Incidentally, Harold did this in Paper Moon, too. If you remember, let's see, how does that start?
It's only a paper moon sailing over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Yeah, Howard was a great composer. Yip wrestled with it for about 3 weeks. And finally he came up with the word. You see, this is what a lyricist is. The word to hit the storyline, the character, the music. It's an incredible thing. Somewhere. All right? And then when you put it in an octave, you get somewhere. Okay? And you jump up, and you're ready for take that journey. All right? Where? Over the rainbow. Okay? And then you're off. It's not a love song. It's a story of a little girl that wants to get out. She's in trouble, and she wants to get somewhere. Well, the rainbow is the only color that she'd see in Kansas. She wants to get over the rainbow. But then Yip put in something which makes it a Yip song. He said, "And the dreams you dare to dream really do come true." You see, and that word dare lands on the note, and it's a perfect thing, and it's been generating courage for people for years afterwards, you know. This was supposed to be an answer, MGM's answer to Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And of about 10 major critics at that time when Wizard of Oz came out, I would say only 2 liked the show. The other 8 said it was corny, that it was heavy, that Judy Garland was no good, and so forth. Oh, yeah, you could read again in the book, Who Put the Rainbow in the Wizard of Oz by Harold Meyerson and Ernie Harburg. But it persisted, you know. And then in 1956, when television first started saturating the nation.
More than 20 years later.
More than 20 years later. I don't think they even had their money back from the show, see. MGM sold the film rights to CBS, who then put it on. And it hit the top of it broke out every single record there was, and it's been playing every year since then. And of course, it went around the world, and it's become a major art work, which is, I must say, an American artwork, because the story, the plot with the 3 characters, the brain, the heart, the courage, and finding a home, is a universal story for everybody. And that's an American kind of story, all right? And Yip and Harold put these things into song.
Who did the Munchkins represent?
We represent the lollipop children.
in the, you mean political thing, I think they represented the little people, you know, the people. And that's the way they were, it came on in the book. You see, the book, if you're a purist, you wouldn't like the film. It's just like anything else. There are societies of people who meet and discuss the books. Okay, there's even a society for the Winkies, which are the guards around the Wicked Witch's, its castle. There really is. They meet once a year, and they're serious. And they don't like the picture because it didn't follow the book. See, because Yip and the writers changed it as Hollywood will.
Was the book a little bit more favorable to the Winkies?
No. Well, yes, the Winkies were good people, and they were played up there. If you go back and read the book, you will see that they were a lovely, decent kind of people. Yes, that was one thing. I guess it wasn't PC there, you know. But in other words, when you read a good novel and you see the film, there's hardly any relationship between the two. All these lines from a film have entered the American language in a way that people don't even know where they came from. You know, Toto, looks like we're not in Kansas anymore. Or, come out, wherever you are, which in the 70s started taking on when the gay movement started. This line started meaning different things, you see.
Come out, wherever you are.
So the songs keep growing with the times people interpret them, you know?
How did you feel in late 1950s when it was a hit, when people started hearing it all over the world?
Well, I think they were quite surprised, along with the film moguls, you know, and the fact that it, years later, he and Harold both said that they did not know what depth and strength that that song Over the Rainbow had. And also one other one, the song Ding Dong the Witch is Dead is a universal liberation of freedom, a private freedom, you know, which isn't seen like that, but it one time when some tyrannical owner of an airlines company stepped down, all the employees started singing Ding Dong the Witch is Dead. So people use these words, and during the war, World War II, we're off to see the wizard was sung by troops marching, you know. So, but nobody knows that Yip wrote the words. It's, now Harold wrote the music, and the songs were Yip and Harold. That's right.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Back in a minute.
Last night, when we were young, love was a star, a song unsung. Life was so new. So real, so right. Ages ago, last night, today. Go. slip away in one little day.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman, as we continue on our tour through the life of lyricist Yip Harburg with his son, Ernie Harburg.
We're walking through the gallery here at the Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts, which has the Necessity of Rainbows, which dedicated to the works of Yip Harburg, the lyricist. And we're now looking at the various exhibitions. And while we're looking for Finian's Rainbow, I want to tell you that in 1944, Yip conceived and co-wrote the script and put on a show called Bloomer Girl, which was a way ahead of its time, because Bloomer Girl was Dolly Bloomer, who was an actual suffragette in 1860 who stood up and invented pants. And it was radical in those days. And the show was about Dolly Bloomer. And she ran an underground railroad bringing slaves up. And she had an underground paper. And she was an incredible woman. And this was a political show. Some great songs in there. Maureen McGovern does Right as the Rain in a great way. Lena Horne does Eagle and Me, which was the first song on Broadway that wasn't a blues lamentation about the black-white situation. It was a call to action. We got to be free, the Eagle and Me. Okay? And Dooley Wilson, who was in Casablanca, sang that.
We got to be free. Me.
So again, Yip managed to get his philosophy into his show, which was the second truly integrated American musical after Oklahoma. And while, you know, it has been played around, it still marked that historically. After that came
You mean blacks and whites playing in the cast?
No, not in there. In Finney's Rainbow, I mean that it was a political statement. Bloomer Girl was a political statement, and it was a smash hit. In 1946, Yip conceived the idea, the story, the script for Finian's Rainbow, which was meant to be an anti-racist and, in a certain sense, anti-capitalist show also.
Let's find it.
All right.
Let's find Finian's Rainbow.
There's Cabin in the Sky, which is the first all-black Hollywood film in the 40s, which Yip and Harold did also. Happiness is Just a Thing came called Joe. Here's Bloomer Girl that I'm talking about. So we should be somehow coming onto Finian's Rainbow. But here's Yip. Here, there is a video of Yip talking, if you want to meet the man.
You got into political trouble in this country at a time when a lot of people got into political trouble during the McCarthy years. Were you blacklisted?
Thank God, yes.
During the McCarthy period, were they actually going through your lyrics with a fine-tooth comb, looking for lines that might be subversive, that might show Yip Harburg's true political colors?
Yes. I wrote a song for Cabin in the Sky, which Ethel Waters sang, and was part of the situation in the picture. It was a poor woman who had nothing in life except this one man, Joe. And she sang, "It seemed like happiness is just a thing called Joe.
It seemed like happiness is just a thing called Joe."
One of the producers with not a macroscope but a microscope found in this lyric that happiness is just a thing called Joe was a tribute to Joe Stalin. We're kidding about it now, but the country, this was the blackest and darkest moment in the history of this beautiful country.
Sometime the cabin gloomy and the table. Life is easy go.
Lord Finian's Rainbow at last. This was, you've conceived this in 1946, and Fred Sadie, who was his co-script writer, and Harold Arlen demurred from writing this because he felt that it was, Yip was too fervent in his political themes, and he wanted to, Harold wanted to do something else. So Yip got Burt Lane, and then came out this great, great score from Finney's Rainbow, Old Devil Moon.
That you stole from the skies, it's that old devil moon in your eyes.
Etc. But the theme of Finian's was a total fantasy, and it was an American fable in which an Irishman and his daughter come from Ireland, search around, and find Rainbow Valley in Missituckee, okay? And he believes that if he plants the crock of gold, which he stole from the leprechaun, in the ground, that it will grow, just like at Fort Knox, right? The whole thing was fabulous.
I hear a bird, a glockamaho. Cheerin' word, I hear a breeze, a river shining breeze. It well may be, it's followed me across the seas. Then tell me. Our things in Glockamara. Is that little brook still leaping there? Does it still run down to Donegal?
Southern white senator, a very stereotypic part, finds out that Finian has this land and tries to run him out of town because there's blacks and whites living together in the, you know, the sharecroppers, and they claim that Finian's daughter is a witch, and they're going to burn her at the stake, and all sorts of, you know, incredible things that say something about the American scene. But the score was so great that people who see it do not see it as a socialist tract, which is the only one on Broadway. They see it as a very, very entertaining musical, and unique in American musicals, because in the first place, there are very, very few musicals which are original. Most musicals are adapted from books. And this was just conceived by Fred Sadie and Yip as a satiric send-off on the American society. So you've got this great song in here, When the Idle Poor Become the Idle Rich. How are you going to know who is who is which? Okay, yeah, like that.
When the idle poor become the idle rich, you'll never know just who is who or who is which. Won't it be rich when everyone's poor relative becomes a ragged relative and palms no longer itch? What a switch!
When we all have earned and plastic teeth, how will we be turned nickels who underneath?
And when all your neighbors are upper class,
you won't know your Joneses from your Esters. Let's toast the day we drink our drinky up, but with a little pinky up, the day.
And so Finian's Rainbow has become a classic. Now, it's interesting. The Fenians has not had a tour, a national tour, since 1948. But they play it in every single high school in the United States three or four times a month in every state of the Union. So Fenians was at the time, 1947, when a Cold War was beginning and the House Un-American Committee was starting up, and they were searching for lefties. And by 1951, Yip had been blacklisted from any chance to do any of the wonderful shows in that they did in Hollywood, Dr. Doolittle, Treasure Island. He was blocked from working there. And then he was blocked from going into radio and into TV. So, and this is an historical fact which Yip himself says, Broadway, the American theater in New York City, was the only place where an artist could stand up and say whatever he wanted, provided he got the money to put the show on. So for Fenian's Rainbow, they had to have 25 auditions because they said it was a commie red thing. And finally they got the money up and they put the show up. But by that time, Yip was blacklisted. And his next show was Jamaica with Lena Horne, which is an all-black cast. Oh, one other thing in terms of Yip's drive for racial ethnic equality, and that is that Fenian's Rainbow in 1947 was the first show on Broadway where the chorus line consisted of blacks and whites who danced with each other, and the chorus was an integrated affair.
What happened to him during the McCarthy era?
Well, he could not work on any major film that they wanted him to work on from the major studios in Hollywood. The setup was that Roy Brewer, who was the head of the Yahtzee Union, I'm sorry to say that, was the one who...
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, this is a stagehand's union. I'd like to say good things about unions, but they get bureaucratized and they go right-wing, you know. They get bad. This was a bad leader. And he terrorized all of the Jewish moguls who were being accused of communism by the House Un-American Activities Committee, and they yielded to whatever he said to them out of fear that they would get branded as communists or that they boycott the film, all right? And so when, they went called Yip in to do Huckleberry Finn with Burt Lane, then Roy and the guys said, no, he's on our blacklist, okay? And you can't hire him. And then Yip went away, and they wanted him to work on Dr. Doolittle. No, you can't hire him. And the same thing for radio and TV. That was known as a, quote, blacklist, which wasn't, that was the first use of the term, because in small towns where you had company corporations going, if you did something that the company didn't like, you were blacklisted from town. You couldn't get a job in town. But this was the first time, due to the technology, that a blacklist was national and accompanied by a loaded word, communist, that could get you fired any place. For Yip, it was horrible because his friends, who were artists, suddenly had no income. And there was suicides, there was divorces, there were people who left the country, there were people whose lives were just ruined. And so Yip supported some of them. Dalton Trumbull, who was one of the Hollywood Ten, who were first picked out by the House Un-American Activities Committee to go to jail for a year of citation. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? You know, Yip fronted him with money and so forth. It was a horrible time.
How long couldn't Yip work for?
For about from 1951 to 1962. He came back to Hollywood in 1962, and he and Harold Arlen did Gay Paris, which is with Judy Garland. She asked them to come back, and it's a cult animated cartoon now, which you can get in your video. And I remember him putting on a show at the Tabor Auditorium, Welcome Back, Yip, you know, and he, in 62.
But that means that The Wizard of Oz made it big during the time that he was blacklisted. That was, and when you consider the social commentary that it was making, that's pretty profound.
Yeah, but I don't think hardly anyone knows the political symbolism underneath The Wizard of Oz, because, again, it's a thing that happens in Finian's Rainbow. Even though, as Peter Stone, a noted playwright on Broadway, said, it's the only socialist track ever on Broadway, all right? People don't hear the political message in it, okay? They are vastly entertained. And the same thing happens with The Wizard. You know, no one would even think of such a thing.
My song, like When the Idle Poor Become the Idle Rich, and Brother Can You Spare a Dime, caused a great deal of furor during a period in Hollywood when a fellow by the name of Joe McCarthy was reigning supreme. And so they got something up for people to take care of us, like me, called the blacklist. And I landed on the enemy list. And in order to overcome the enemy list, what was the enemy list? Well, it's a, one that you were a red. Another one that you were a blue nose. And the other one that you're on the blacklist. Finally, I thought the rainbow was a wonderful symbol of all these lists. In order to overcome the enemy list and this rainbow that they gave me the idea for, I wrote this little poem, Lives of Great Men All Remind Us, Greatness Takes No Easy Way. All the heroes of tomorrow are the heretics of today. Socrates and Galileo, John Brown, Thoreau, Christ and Debs, heard the night cry, down with traitors, and the dawn shout, up the Rebs. Nothing ever seems to bust them. Gallows, crosses, prison bars. Though we try to readjust them, there they are among the stars. Lives of great men all remind us we can write our names on high, and departing leave behind us thumbprints in the FBI.
Today's program was actually produced for radio in 1996 with Errol Maitland and Dan Coughlin. Special thanks to Gary Helm, Brother Shine, and Julie Drizin. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Monte, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Ryan Devereux, Dina Gazdur, Manal Khan, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nagera, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Nick Gilla, Hugh Grant, Jessel Noor, Jessica Lee. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, are you a First Nations, Métis, or Inuit student? Not convinced university, college, or vocational trade school is possible? Or wondering what you should do after high school? Inspire can help you and your friends. Register for Inspire's free Indigenous mentorship program, Rivers to Success. Joining Rivers to Success gets you access to great information, great prizes, and exciting content. Discover careers and post-secondary paths geared towards Indigenous students across Turtle Island, just like you. Register online today at rivers2success.ca. Again, that's rivers2success.ca. Prizes, information, and fun are waiting.